T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
And welcome to the Howard Eskin podcast. This is episode number 12, and it is the Phillies bench coach, former manager of the Phillies and elsewhere in baseball, Larry Boa. And it's just, it's still, I know in Philadelphia, baseball is not on the top of people's lists, especially with the Eagles coming up soon. The Sixers are now really off until camp starts, which is in October. But Larry Boa has always been an interesting guy, and for the most part, you know, expresses his honesty when he can. But it's not just the issues with the team, it's why the issues exist with the team, but also the baseballs in baseball. And you saw it in the All-Star Game home running hitting contest. Now, you don't see it with good pitching, and Larry Boa addresses that. And he's not the only one that has this opinion about the baseballs in baseball. Even the commissioner, there's something different about those baseballs. And Larry Boa explains that, what's different about those baseballs. But he even said they may tweak the technology in the manufacturing of baseballs. Tweak the technology. It just, but that's my opinion. We'll talk more about it. But Larry Boa, very insightful in a lot of areas. And who is the face of baseball? I know you've heard it during the All-Star game. And after that, it's Aaron Judge. Relax. The media is just, ESPN just kills things when they start doing it. Just kill it. They ruin it for people because they all of a sudden, well, he's in New York and this will get us ratings because we have the Yankees on most of the time. It's ridiculous. But anyway, let's, and Larry addresses that as well. Let's listen to Larry Boa. Okay, I'm joined by, I have to call him a Philadelphia legend in different areas, whether it's a baseball legend or a legend of honesty. I'll give you a legend of honesty. And that would be former Phillies manager and now bench coach for the Phillies, Larry Boa. And Larry, there's so many things to talk about, and it's obviously not just the Phillies. It's right. The All-Star game. You know, there's two sides to that, and we'll get into that if, for a second. But you, as a baseball guy, it's been around really good teams, and obviously we can honestly say this is not a good baseball team.
Right.
How do you handle this? How do you handle knowing this team's not going to win maybe 60 games?
Well, I'm going to be honest with you that, and it took me a while, you know, once the season started. But a lot of times when you go back, especially when you're on the road, you go back to your hotel room and you say, you know, what's happening? And then I just turned the clock back to the early 70s when I came up, Howard. Mm. We were a real bad team. You know that. You watched it. We had a lot of young guys. What was it, 1 year Carlton won the 28, and I think, what did we win?
57 or 59?
Right, 57. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that was a bad team.
Yes.
So sometimes you have to take a step back and say, you know what, this happened to you. It did happen to me. I mean, me in particular, I remember getting called into Frank Lucchese's office in 1970. I was sitting under 200 in June, and I said, I'm out of here. You know, the paper said he's going to be sent down, and he called me in and said, hey, you know what, you're the shortstop. I don't care if you get a hit the rest of the year. And from that day on, it seemed like I sort of relaxed and played the way I was capable of playing. But it's hard to go through a season knowing that you're outmanned before you throw a pitch. And it's because of the inexperience. Even though, you know, Howard, the one thing that people ask me is, well, you got guys 24, 25. But if you look at their big league experience, it's not a lot of big league experience. And this is no excuse. You know, we're like I said, I just read an article today that 52% of the time when we have a man on third with less than two outs, we strike out. That's not good. I mean, that's not good at all. And we hit into more double plays than anybody. So, you know, there's with all these one-run games, these little things add up to the reason you're not winning a game. We get caught stealing. I think we're in the bottom third of caught stealing, and we've had runners thrown out at home plate. So things like that happen, and then again, you got to pinch yourself and say, you know, you went through this for 2 or 3 years yourself. So that's how I try to do it. And then, obviously, as a coach, you got to keep teaching, no matter what your record is. When you go out there at 3 o'clock and you've seen us, we teach, and while you're teaching, you don't go, oh, man, we're 30 games under 500 or we're 25 games. You try to do the best you can, and hopefully when some of these guys, you know, wake up one morning and they say, oh, now I know what they're talking about. Now, you know, hopefully that kicks in. But right now it's tough. It really is tough. But you got to, you know, you have a job to do and you got to do it.
You know, you mentioned something interesting. Frank Lucchese told you he doesn't care whether you get a hit the rest of the season. You're the shortstop. Now, come dial into today's players. Can you do that with today's players and relax him or just have him say, well, I'm here anyway, which is the case in some cases?
I think each player is different. I think that the fact that I actually thought I was getting sent down. Back then, when you didn't do what you were supposed to do, and I'm going to be honest with you, if it wasn't for the rebuild in the early 70s, I would have been sent out and maybe never came back. But the fact that a lot of organizations, they let these guys fight through this, and, you know, some organizations feel that if you send someone down, they might not return with a good frame of mind. And there's other organizations say, if I send this guy down, he's going to show me that I made a mistake in sending him down. So it's up to the individual. It's up to the organization what avenue they want to take. I know that if I would have been sent down, I mean, it's easy for me to say this, that my reaction would be, you're making a mistake. I know I deserve to get sent down, but I'm going to be back up here as soon as I can, as soon as I get this figured out. And I've seen other guys, when I played, get sent down, basically throw up their arms and say, oh, the organization's against me. And my philosophy on getting sent down in that, if you're mentally a tough kid, you're going to find a way to fight through this and to figure it out. And if you're not mentally tough, then you really don't want them on your baseball team. So I think that when you do get sent down, if you really love the game of baseball, you're going to find a way to say, I need to make a couple adjustments here, and I'm going to do this. And like I said, other organizations say, hey, fight through this. You got to fight through it and figure it out yourself. So, you know, different people have react differently. I know how I would have reacted. I might have been disappointed, but I had no reason to be disappointed. I was hitting under 200. So if they said, hey, you're going all the way down to A ball, I would have said, okay, that's the way it is. It's a sport that you got to produce. And if you don't produce over 162 games, you got to pay the consequences.
You know, Pete McCannon, I'm going to paraphrase it now, but it's the gist of what he said is, it's hard to get through to Odubel Herrera. Now, I know he doesn't speak much English, very little English. I get that, but not in terms of the conversation. But obviously, he makes mistakes, and even the manager, and Pete's handled it fairly well, but he said it's hard to get through to him and it's hard to understand. Why is that the case?
Well, you know, one thing that sort of shocks me with Odubel, he does. You've seen him play when he's really good and you've seen him play when he's not real good. The thing that stands out with him is I know for a fact that he's been playing baseball probably since he's been 8 years old. And you figure that when you play that long, your baseball instincts, eventually, you're going to start knowing, hey, when to steal, when to go first to third, when to take a chance and dive for a ball in the outfield. If the score's tied, you don't want to do it in the eighth inning. If you're up 4 or 5 runs, you want to do it. These are little things that you assume, because he's played so long, that he knows how to do it. And there's been days where I've seen his instincts, they're impeccable. And then 2 days later, he does something, and you start scratching your head, and you go, why? So, you know, it's one of those things that you hope, because hand-eye coordination with him, I've seen him, Howard, where he's on fire. He hits pitches, I'm going, how'd he hit that? And then other games, he's swinging and missing at balls that aren't even close to being a strike. So, again, it's a matter of, I personally think, it's a matter of concentration. It has nothing to do with ability. I think it's concentration. And maybe he's not hitting the way he should be, and he's thinking about, is it bad at first base? And then he says, well, let me try to steal this base. and make up for that terrible at bat. This game requires a lot of concentration, and I think his concentration goes up and it goes down. And that's a mark of being a big league player, is to be able to concentrate every inning of every game, and sometimes that's hard for some guys to do.
You know, you talked about the percentage of striking out with men on third base. Scoring with men in, you know, getting runners in with in scoring position has been brutal as well, but the strikeouts are unbelievable. I know you talk to the players about that. Why don't they change their approach with two strikes?
That's a good, great question, because I see two hitters. They stand out in my mind because I think they're real good baseball players, Rizzo and Votto. And if you watch the Cub games, which I watch baseball, when Phillies aren't playing, I'll pick up any game. I watch the Cincinnati Reds. If they're playing on the coast, I'll watch the Cubs. And I watch these guys hit with men in scoring position with two strikes, and they're both choked up 3 to 4 inches on the bat. And, you know, I've talked to guys. I said, you know what? You guys should start choking. Watch these two hitters. And the guy that's choked up the last 3 or 4 games is Tommy Joseph. And I said, I see a little bit more bat. What are you doing? He says, I'm choking up with two strikes. So, you know, if Tommy's finally said, hey, you know what? I'm going to start trying this. And that's what this thing's all about, is being able to adjust on the fly. A lot of guys say, oh, I can't make an adjustment with two strikes. I can't choke up with two strikes. I never hit like that. Well, you know, that's what we call making adjustments on the fly. And if you're not able to do that and you continue to strike out, then you're not going to be around very long. And I know the one thing that has happened in the industry is that teams have basically accepted strikeouts as long as you put up 30 to 35 home runs. Which to me, you hear a lot of fans saying, a guy's either going to strike out, he's going to hit a home run, or he's going to walk. There's no action. And if I'm a fan, and when I read that, I'm saying, you know what? This person's right. I mean, you see home runs, you see a lot of strikeouts, you see guys walk. You don't see hitting and running because you're afraid to put a hit and run on because they swing through the ball. You don't see squeezes because guys have the inability, they can't lay down a bunt. And it doesn't have to be a perfect bunt. When you do a suicide squeeze, just get the ball down on the ground. So all these little things that we used to do when we played, it's like the baseball industry says people want to see home runs. They want to see a lot of runs scored. They don't want to see strikeouts, but they're seeing strikeouts because of the fact guys aren't making any adjustments with two strikes at the plate.
I know.
There was a stat that I looked at, and I think I told you or somebody, that the 1980 Phillies had 718 strikeouts in 1980. We're already way past that, and we still have 70-some games to go. And that's unbelievable to have that many. But we're not the only team. You go check out all of baseball, the strikeouts are off the charts. And, you know, it's a matter of, you know, this is a copycat league, and some organizations eventually is going to go, you know what, I want some athletes to put the ball in play, go score from first on the double. And you're going to see a reversal here. I don't know when, but it is, as you well know, you've covered baseball a long time. You're going to see it go back to, hey, we need to put balls in play more. We need to be more athletic going from first to third. We need to steal some bases. It's one of those things that sort of evolved in baseball.
Does Mikel Franco know there's a right side of the ball field from...
you know what? This kid... And I'm telling you this because you come out early. This kid does all his work in BP, hits balls, and not on the field, in the cages. I've gone down and watched him with Matt. He hits every ball to right center in the net. I mean, with a good fluid swing. And for some reason, when the game starts, he speeds up the game speeds up for him. He wants to drive in the run. He's got to learn how to pass the baton. If there's a man on third, Mikey wants to drive him in no matter what. And I'm not saying that's selfish. He wants to drive that run in. But he's got to learn, you know what, if I don't drive it in, the guy behind me, hopefully, he might hit a double or he might hit a home run. And until Mikey's mindset is, I'm looking for a pitch, especially until two strikes, because when he does hit the ball, he does a lot of damage. The ball jumps off his bat, and I've seen him hit balls to right center when he's really, really looks like he's on the baseball. They go out easy.
Yeah, but he's one of those players.
He knows, Howard, that he's that strong. But once the game starts, he gets in that pull mode, and pitchers, you know, they have reports on everybody. Basically, I guarantee when they go over Mikey Franco in our meeting, they say, don't throw him a strike no matter what the count is. If it's 2-0 or 3-1, pitch to them like it's 0-2 or 1-2. And that's basically what they do. And if you take a look at all his at-bats, I'm not saying everyone, but I'll tell you right now, a third or maybe even more, he gets himself out. The pitcher doesn't get him out.
Bo, you mentioned earlier about guys swinging for home runs. Isn't that exactly what Mikel Franco does and won't get out of that?
He swings real, real hard. And it's ironic you said that because this past weekend before the break, Schmitty was in our locker room and we were talking. And Mike, you know, as great a player as he turned out to be, he said his first 3 or 4 years, he said, I swung 100%. He said, then I realized one day I went up there and he said, I'm going to swing 80%. There was runners in scoring position. And he said he ended up hitting a home run swinging 80%. And he's tried to explain this to Mikey. You don't have to swing 100%. Slow the swing down a little bit, 80 to 85%. You'd be shocked at the ball jumping off your bat because he's that strong. And Schmitty was obviously that strong. I'm not saying everybody can swing 80 or 85%, but Michael Franco can do that. And Mike's talked to him about it. So hopefully, you know, I know I talked to him this past weekend. I don't know. We'll see what happens. But he's got, as you well know, he's got tools. There's no question about that. But we've all seen guys with tools that never make adjustments. He's got to make some adjustments.
Mike Schmidt was one of those guys that was adjusting throughout his career, but it doesn't seem like today's. I mean, he moved up in the box, back in the box, closer to the plate, back. And he did everything. When the pitcher caught up to him, he tried to adjust to them. But today's players don't seem to do. They're just locked into what they've done. And I just don't understand it.
You know, you face a guy like Leak for the Cardinals. And I remember this. We were sitting there. Matt Stairs was talking. He said, this guy's got a real good sinker. Make him get the ball up. And if you might want to move up in the box. You know, if you move up in the box, you get the ball before it sinks. I mean, he went over everything. And then the game starts, and everybody's standing in the same place they normally stand. It's a comfort thing that they feel like they're comfortable in, and they don't feel like they should make that adjustment on a certain day. I mean, like you said, I've seen Schmitty make adjustments in an at-bat. He would be way in deep in the box, and he'd get two strikes and move up. I've done it. Lazinski's done it. I see Joey Votto do it. I see Rizzo do it. I see Murphy shorten his swing, spread out a little more. You're seeing all these great hitters do these little things, and then you see some of our young guys saying it doesn't feel right. The bottom line is, if it doesn't feel right, maybe you should try it, and who knows what might happen. You might figure out something to say, hey, you know what, if I spread out a little bit with two strikes, I can wait a little bit longer on the ball, I can see it, I can let it get deeper in the zone, and I can put it in play.
You know, watching the All-Star game, I saw some of the good hitters, and I think Bellinger was one of them, a rookie player who's already choked up on the bat. He didn't even have two strikes. I saw Jim Leland at the All-Star game, and I know you know Jim very well.
Right.
He says Barry Bonds choked up his entire career on the bat. But these guys just don't think they can, I assume, don't think they can hit the ball the same way if they choke up on the bat.
Well, you know, that is true. You're not going to probably hit the ball as far if you're up. Just like when you hit an iron in golf and you choke down on the golf club, it's not going to go as far as opposed to you hold it on the end. But like you said, you mentioned some great players that have done that. And the until there's a fear or an organization that comes down and says, you know, we're not dealing with these 150 to 170 strikeouts every year. This is not going to happen. They understand it, but they don't realize how important. When you don't we strike out close to, I don't know, 9 or 10 times. It's not a good number, but again, it's all over baseball. So just say you strike out 10 times a game. That means you have 17 other outs to try to score runs. You're giving away 10 outs by not even having a team make another play, make a throw from the hole, make a guy go first to third and throw the ball in, it goes off his shoulder. These little things, they mean so much by just putting it in play. It doesn't mean getting a hit. Put it in play. And for some reason, the industry right now is, hey, strikeouts are strikeouts, an out's an out. And that's not true. An out is not an out. You've got to make the other team handle the ball a little bit and make them make some mistakes.
And it just seems like the manager really can talk to them, but but it's not the same as it maybe even 15 years ago. Players would listen to the manager. I don't know how many guys actually listen to the coaches or the manager.
Well, in my opinion, these showcase games that these high school kids go to are really ruining baseball as far as the fundamentals are concerned. They're going to these showcases. They put everybody – I've been there to showcase when I was with MLB. They get all the outfielders in right field, and they hit up a ground ball and say, throw the ball home. None of them hit a cutoff, man, because they want to show their arm strength. So they throw it all the way in on the fly, and you have scouts saying, wow, look at that arm. Not a chest-high throw where you stop the guy that hit the ball from going from first to second. They're showing their arm strength. They get in the batter's box. They try to hit the ball as far as they can. You see the scouts say, oh, tremendous power. It's more of an individual thing that these showcase. They don't teach them how to win. They don't teach them how to go first to third. So these showcase games, basically they're showing off their own skills and not thinking about the fundamentals of the game. And that's what happens. And now they get to the big leagues, and they're going to show people their own skills. And to me, those showcase games, they ought to cut them out because they're not teaching them anything about how to play winning-type baseball.
You know, Bo, how did the Phillies get so bad?
Well, I think one thing is that, you know, when Rube was here, it was sort of a rebuild. They get rid of maybe Jimmy. Then they get rid of Chase. Then they get rid of Cole. Then they get rid of Chooch, you know. And now it's a big-time blow-up, you know, rebuild. And there's really no guy right now where you can say he's the leader of our team. And every team has one guy you go, you know what, you put him in the middle, everybody else drops down. It's nice to have more than one guy, obviously, but we really don't have one what you call a true leader. And that means a lot. And these guys are all, you know, they're searching right now. They're searching for their identity. They know there's guys coming up. And they also know that if they put up decent numbers, again, we're talking about numbers, that they're going to play in the big league somewhere. They might not be with the Phillies, but they're going to play in the big leagues. And, as, you know, as Matt has stated in a lot of his interviews, he's saying this year we're evaluating who the guys we want to keep and who the guys we don't think we're going to keep. So, and these guys know they're being evaluated, but yet they still know that, hey, if I put up some numbers, I might not be with the Phillies, but I'll be somewhere else. So it's sort of a selfish type thing, but it's also you have to understand that they're worried about their future. I mean, Tommy Joseph, let's face it, he's read all the articles, and you're going to see a lot of articles about guys getting traded, not with the Phillies, but every team. And it's tough for these guys to play. I remember playing that, and there was one year where my name was thrown out there, and it bothers you a little bit. Yeah, but you know, that's part of the gig now. You got to deal with it. From now until August 1st is not a very good time to be a manager because you're going to have articles in the paper about so-and-so going here, so-and-so. And most of those, they're not true, but there's a few that are true. So you got to be able to deal with that. That's part of being a big league baseball player. But these guys are fighting for their own lives right now. And I think that's without having a true leader in there, that has a lot to do you know, with our record. It's no excuse because I told you those numbers before, 52% of the time we're striking out with a man on third. You got to put the ball in play. We hit into more double plays. Mikey and Tommy Joseph, I think, have 35 or 36 getting thrown out on steals. Those are the things that lead up to losses. And when you have 34, 35 one-run losses, and those little things are attributing to those, cut those in half. Just play 500 during those. Go 17 and 17. And your record changes. So they're all little things, but they mean a lot. You know, there was an article that said little things are the reason. They're not little. They're big things, but, you know, people they overlook them. If it happens in the third inning, they say, oh, yeah, the guy didn't get a runner in the third inning with a man on third. Then we end up losing the game, but nobody goes back to the third inning. It's always what happened at the end. In the eighth inning, so-and-so struck out. Or they're big things, but, you know, players have to pay attention more to detail in those situations.
Yeah, Tommy Joseph is going to hear about trades because
one
of the better players in the minor leagues is Hoskins, so he's going to have to be with the team at some point in the future, I would think.
Well, you know, Tommy Joseph, to me, has done it. You know, when you saw this guy play last year at first base, you go, oh, my God. And he's really improved. Mm-hmm. And we all know how strong he is. I mean, he's on pace to hit 25, 30 home runs and drive in probably 80 to 85. I mean, if he continues what he's doing right now, and that's a pretty good year. But then you throw it into proper perspective, you look at Rizzo, you look at Goldschmidt, you look at Votto, those numbers pale compared to those three, and those three are really good hitters. Mm-hmm. So, you know, whether it's Joseph, whether it's Freddie Galvis, whether it's Franco, they're going to read all this stuff. They're human, and if they don't read it, their families are going to read it to them. Right. So it's a period of time where you got to be mentally tough and say, you know what, it's out of my hands. I'm going to go out and do the best I can to help us win games. If I get traded, I get traded. If I don't, hopefully I'll stay here. But Rhys Hopkins has proven that, at least at AAA, that he's close to being ready. And it just so happens that Tommy Joseph's done a good job for us. So, you know, that's up to Matt and Andy McPhail and what they want to do with that situation.
All right, Bo, let's deal with the home runs. Now, we've talked about it. I've talked to other people. The home run hitting contest, okay, it was exciting for the fans, but it was a joke how far those baseballs went. Baseball continues to deny that those balls are juiced. There's no way they're not.
They can deny it, you know, whatever they want to say. When you pick up a baseball, as long as I picked it up, it's different. I'm going to tell you that right now. The ball's different. The seams aren't as high. They're like golf balls when you pick them up. And I've been in BP where we've used baseballs for 3 days in a row. Usually when you use baseballs 3 days in a row, I'm not saying they get mushy, but they throw them out. They say, these balls are just as hard 3 days later as they are when we took them out of the box. And they're getting pummeled all over the field. So they can say, I'm just telling you, with my vision of watching balls go out and holding baseballs, these balls are not the same. That's all I'm going to say. I don't know how. It's harder. The bats obviously are like cement. You never pick up a bat where you see the barrel chipped. That doesn't happen. Now you'll see bats break in the handle because they're so thin, and if you don't square it up, they'll split right there by your hands. But the barrels, you go to any bat rack, there's no chip. We used to tape bats at the bottom because it would chip, and we use them for BP. These bats are so hard, it's unbelievable. And I guarantee those balls they use in the home run hitting contest, they were completely different than the ones they're using now.
Yeah, the ones they use in the All-Star game. Now, pitching for the game obviously changed that because good pitching is going to beat good hitting. But
But
the home run hitting contest, it's the same balls, and they can't use them in other times because they're marked as All-Star balls on it rather than, you know, the major league ball. So there's no – when a guy hits a ball – and first of all, before I get to what Aaron Judge did – when you said the laces are not as high, does that make it more difficult for the pitcher to throw a better breaking ball?
I think it makes it
harder
to throw a breaking ball, and that's why you see all these blisters. I think I've never seen so many pitchers get blisters in their starts because they're so close to the, you know, there's no nothing that's rising above where you can get, there's a lot of friction when you throw a breaking ball. But getting back to Judge, I mean.
Yeah, he hits three home runs over 500 feet. That's ridiculous.
I've been in that park, Howard, a lot. Mm-hmm. I'd never seen anybody go up on that glass, ever. And there's been Stanton. I watch it. I go out early when we go to Miami just to watch him hit. I'm not going to say that the Judge is much stronger than – they're close.
Right.
But I've seen Stanton hit balls nowhere near where Judge was hitting them. I mean, it was ridiculous. And, I was watching it on TV, and I went, oh, my God. It's unbelievable. And I know he's a strong man. He's 6'7", 6'8". But to hit balls that far, and if you think about it, he's supplying all the power because the BP pitchers were throwing 45 or 50 miles an hour.
Right.
So usually when a guy's throwing 95, he supplies a lot of the power, and when you hit it, it's going to explode off the bat. But these guys hitting in that home run contest, the coaches, the BP coach is throwing 50 miles an hour. So all that power is coming from them. The pitcher's not helping them at all.
You know, so let's give, okay, the home run hitting contest, there's no question that those balls were juiced. I mean, they can say it all. Okay. But the regular season at the All-Star break, there were more home runs at the All-Star break this year than any year in the history. And that includes the steroid years in the history of baseball at this point in the year. There has to be something going on with those baseballs.
Well, no one's ever going to admit it. I mean, you know, let's face it, fans, when they come out, they want to see action. They don't like. They think if you read comments from people, they don't like 2-1 games unless you're a baseball purist. They don't like They probably didn't like that All-Star game last night, but I knew that was going to be low scoring because I'd be one of those pitchers. Not only they throw 97, but they put the ball where they want. That's a lot, has a lot to do with these home runs too. These guys are throwing 97, and some of these guys, we call them rock throwers. 97 down the middle goes a long way. It doesn't matter that. It's going to go a long way. But these guys that pitched last night were the elite pitchers of baseball, and they were putting balls on the outer half and inner half, and so it kept them off balance. But when you have that many home runs, I know guys are bigger and stronger. There's no question about that. They eat better. They have trainers all year round. But there's no way that home run ratio should jump that much in one year. It's just it's hard to believe that it did. And if it is, if everything's on the up and up with the baseballs, then they're going to have to lower the mound again. Because I've seen singles and doubles hitters literally get jammed. You know, when you swing, you throw your bat and you hear somebody swear something, damn, or and the ball goes out of the ballpark. And I'm just going, you got to be kidding me. I mean, I've seen it happen a lot this year. They're not big guys. They get jammed at the plate and the ball goes in the seats.
You know, how do you like the new numbers in baseball? Exit velocity, now we got to see it on TV all the time, and launch angle. What is happening with numbers? And it happens, it seems like in a lot of sports, but baseball and basketball with the...
Yeah, I mean, that's you know, when teams make trades now, you know, they have the analytical people do that stuff. I think there's a lot of merit to the analytics, but I also think sometimes there's too much info. You know, like we have charts on what pitchers throw when the count's 2-0. 85% of the time, when this guy's 2-0, he's going to throw a slider. Well, the other 15%, it might be a fastball right down the middle. But we rely so much on this that guys get. They go up there saying, okay, 2-0, 85%, I'm going to roll the dice here and sit slider, and he throws one down the middle, and you're going, what are you looking at? You know, too much info. I think there's too much info sometimes. The old adage used to be when you went into a slump, everybody would say, hey, see the ball and hit the ball, just like when you played when you were a kid. See it and hit it. React to breaking balls. Look for fastballs. Hit off the fastball. If he hangs a breaking ball, you hit it. But with the analytics now, there's a lot of information where to play hitters in the shifts. You know, to me, if you get the right combo of the analytics and makeup together, now you have something.
Well,
it can't be all one way. You know, makeup to me is huge. A guy's character is huge. These are things that you can't measure. In numbers, this is you watch a guy play and you go, oh, man, this guy, he's got great character. His makeup's off the chart. He looks like he's a leader. Guys follow him. You watch him in the clubhouse. They gather around him. Those things are important, especially in baseball. You know, in football, you play once a week. Basketball, three times. Hockey, three. But you're playing every day from February until October. Every single day, you might have a day off here and there, but you're with these guys. You know the makeup of them. You know guys that when things go bad, do they fight or do they throw their hands up and say, everything's going against me? To me, makeup is just as key as anything else when you put together, you know, your baseball team. The analytical part, if you can get a guy with great makeup and his launch angle is what it's supposed to be and velocity up, then you got yourself a gem.
Well,
you got yourself a guy, you go, wow, we got it.
You put all those things together, but what good is exit velocity if the player doesn't make contact?
If you don't make contact, I know. I mean, that's the thing I'd like to, you know. I mean, you see that. I mean, when we have a guy on our team that when he hits the ball, the exit velocity off the bat is off the charts, and it's Rupp. Rupp is a strong man, but obviously the inconsistency of putting it in play hard sort of negates the exit velocity. But when he hits it, his exit velocity is right up there with the top five guys. But again, it's the consistency of hitting it, you know, throughout your whole season.
Bo, is there a leader on the team? And if so, who would it be?
There he is right now. It's Freddie Galvis. And Freddie's done it the right way. You know, Chase has been here, Jimmy's been here, Cliff Lee, Halliday, Chooch, and Freddie's been around these guys. And, you know, there is a pecking order. It's just out of respect to the game of baseball. Once those guys left, then Freddie felt, you know what, I think I'm one of the guys that can do this. And he's unbelievable. Freddie's unbelievable. A lot of guys think that to be a leader, you have to hit 300. See, to me, a leader's a leader, whether you're hitting 200 or 300. If you're playing every day, you can be a leader. And Freddie leads by example. He plays hard. He doesn't want to come out of any game. Would Freddie like to hit 320? No question. No question. But Freddie does everything. He catches the ball. He hits your home runs. He drives in runs for us. If we had a lineup that was scoring like Washington, like the Dodgers, nobody would say anything about Freddie's on base or Freddie's, he's got to hit higher than 250.
How about this? He runs hard. How about that? How about that Pardon? Novel idea? He runs Pardon? Hard. Freddie runs hard when he hits the right.
Yeah,
he, on ground
sometimes, ball. Sometimes you look at guys, and I find myself doing that. First time we go see a team or a kid that I haven't seen, the first thing I make a comment to, God, you see how hard he ran? It used to be the other way around. When guys didn't run, you would say, look at that guy. He's not even running.
Yeah.
But now when a guy runs real hard every single time, you go, wow, look at that. You know, and again, it's a mindset. That's how you're supposed to play. And Freddie, he's not real fast, but Freddie does. One time he didn't run hard, the guy dropped the ball. But that you don't see that very often with Freddie. Freddie does everything the right way. He's pretty smart as far as baseball sense goes. He's got tremendous hands, tremendous arm. And he's one of those guys in the clubhouse that after the game, he's wearing it. He does not like losing. I mean, he's one of those guys that sits there in front of his locker and he gets really, really down when the team doesn't, you know, when we lose a game 3-2 or 2-1, you know, he can accept that. But when we get blown out or something, we don't play good baseball, he really gets down.
Yeah, well, hang in there.
I will. You know what, Howard? This is the gig that when you sign a contract, whether you're a player, whether you're a coach, whether you're a manager, it doesn't say, I'm getting paid this because we're going to be in the playoffs. It says you're getting paid this because you're a coach or you're a manager or you're a player. So you got to take the good with the bad. And to me, it's more of a challenge now because as bad as we're playing, it's got to get better. It's got to get better at some time where you see the guys you're working with finally kick in. I mean, it took a while with Cesar. I felt like I was beating myself against my head against the wall with him. And then eventually it kicked in, and I said, you know, that's nice. Eventually, and some guys, it takes a little longer, Howard, as you well know. You've covered these sports. Some guys take longer. Some guys, hey, they get it right out of the gate. Mike Trout. You know, you mentioned great players, all these number one picks. It doesn't take that long with them. But when you don't have one number one pick, it takes a little bit longer. So you just got to keep fighting, and you got to go every day. It's hard to do, but you turn the page. You say, I don't care what happened yesterday. We got to win this game today.
You reminded
today
me.
You got to do that. Mentally, you got to do it. And this tests everything about your makeup and everything, whether you're a coach, a player, or a manager. It's tough times, and you got to fight through it.
By mentioning Trout, I've been hearing all of a sudden Aaron Judge is the face of baseball. What happened to Bryce Harper? What happened to Mike Trout?
Yeah, I think I mean, there's no question Aaron Judge is a tremendous talent, but we sort of get carried away. And when I say we, the media, they want to jump on this. If he goes 0-for-20 after the break, they're going to say, man, that home run derby really screwed him up.
Yep.
I mean, you got to do it for more than a year. Let's face it. He hit 178 in the month of September last year, and the kid made some adjustments.
Yep.
But like you said, there's Trout, there's Harper, there's Correa. There's all kinds of bets. There's all kinds of guys that you can say that they're the face of baseball. I think it's a little bit premature to say that Judge is the face of baseball. He's got the ability to be the face for a long time. But a guy just retired that was the face of baseball over there that put up numbers every single year and went to a lot of World Series, and Derek Jeter.
Right.
And to anoint Judge this right out of the gate, I don't think it's fair to him. You know, I don't think that's a fair thing to put on this kid's back at a young age.
Right. Hey, Bo, just hope the Phillies aren't 2 to 3 years away from being 2 to 3 years away from being 2 to 3 years away.
All right, Howard.
Thanks. I'll talk to you.
All right, bye.
And I agree. You cannot make Aaron Judge the face of baseball. He's not the face. Don't forget about, there's so many really good players. What, did Bryce Harper just fade away? Did Mike Trout, because he had an injury, just fade away? Mike Trout was absolutely positively the best player in baseball, but he doesn't play in New York. Bryce Harper plays in Washington. He doesn't play in Chicago or New York. The face of baseball cannot be Aaron Judge after one half of one season. It's my opinion when it comes to that. But coming up in the weeks ahead, this being episode 12, we'll have, you know, we're going to start getting back into the football mode. And I asked this question. People ask about the Sixers. They don't ask about the Phillies, obviously, that much anymore, other than they know they're a bad baseball team. And it's just, it's got to get better sooner or later. You see all these young teams. Watch the Houston Astros, how good they got with their young players, and they did a really good job. But you've got a good job, got to do a good job with your scouting and your farm development. You've got to do a good job there. But so there's not much talk about the Phillies. Obviously, the Sixers and football starting up shortly. And most of the questions I get from people when I see them out and about, the questions are about the Eagles. Well, how do you think? I was at the All-Star game, and the people there that knew where I was from, what do you think of the Eagles? And I'm in a baseball All-Star game. What do you think about the Eagles? Well, and we've talked about this, and we're going to talk about this for months. And camp starts July 27th. I saw Nolan Carroll over the last few days, and their camp starts, he's with the Cowboys now, he's with the enemy. Their camp starts July 21st because they play in the Hall of Fame game. But the Eagles are better because their offense is better. And again, I don't want to get too deep into this. Their offense is better. Their defense will be better. They'll get a better pass rush. But just to finish this off for this week, the 76ers, people, I know they're going to be better. I think they're possibly a 40-win team. But I don't know how they're going to play together. I don't know if Joel Embiid is a terrific player if he stays healthy. If he stays healthy. He's still got to work at it, and he likes to have fun, and you can see him having fun all over the place, and you see him very creative on Twitter, but he's got to work at it, and they have to learn how to play together. This will be basically almost an entire new team. Markel Fultz, Ben Simmons, two guys that haven't played together and won't play together until the start of the season or camp. They haven't played together. J.J. Redick hasn't played with these guys, so they haven't played together. And Joel Embiid hasn't played with those people, so they haven't played together. We've got to face reality, and this is not, I don't want to hear of all these trust the process nonsense. It's trust the profits, actually, with the way the Sixers do things. It's all about the money. But the reality is we have to see, and this is where Brett Brown, he's got the toughest job. The bad teams were bad. So it was tough just to live through it. But this is the toughest job he's going to have as a head coach, trying to get these players to find the right way to have them play together. And that's not an easy thing. It's not an easy thing to mold all these new young players. And J.J. Redick's not young, and he's a veteran, and they needed a veteran, and he's a good shooter, and they really needed a good shooter. Dario Saric and Jimmy Lynam pointed up in one of the podcasts we did. He shoots 31% from three. The average in the NBA is 35, and that's light years from where it needs to be for Dario Saric. But J.J. Redick's going to give you that three-point shot. But there was something that brought up, and I brought this up a while ago, last year when Ben Simmons got hurt. And Al Morgani, of all people, once in a while, Al says something that actually makes some sense on the morning show and actually says something on the morning show. Talks about, with all these injuries to young player, and Markel Fultz will be fine. It's an ankle injury. He'll be ready for the start of training camp without any problems, and it's not a serious injury. But he talked about it being karma. And I thought about that last year. Karma is, and I don't know that I'm really superstitious, but karma is a bitch. It really is a bitch. And if that's what it is with the way they did this, and these players are going to get hurt. And remember, Joel Embiid is not through the woods yet either. In 4 years of basketball, one with college, three with the 76ers, he played 31 games. All in the last season, he's got to play, I think, at least 65 games a year, at least 65. I don't know. I don't think he's going to do that this year. For them to be a legitimate playoff team, not just a playoff team, a legitimate contender, which is not going to happen this year. But in the next few years, I think this coming year, he's going to be on a minutes restriction. He's going to be on a games restriction. So we'll see how it all plays out. But we'll talk more about that when we get into camp with the Sixers and we see how that all goes. So Larry Bowe, very honest guy. We'll be back again in about a week. I try to do these things every week in the summertime. It gets a little slower sometimes, but just subscribe to Howard Eskin Podcast on iTunes and you will be notified. Subscribe doesn't cost you anything, obviously, and you'll be notified when the new podcast goes up. Hope people enjoyed it, and we'll talk to you again next week.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.